Okay, welcome back to Never Iron Anything Comics Podcast. This is episode 163. Look at that. This week, as part of the short series where I chat to comics collaborators, I'm joined by one of my favourites. Part of the Art92 husband and wife comics and art team, as well as being a comics creator, artist, art teacher and motivational running guru. She's collaborated me, sadly for her, on a couple of occasions. I'm sure a low point of her career. It's only H, a.k.a. Helena Edwardson.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
That's right, isn't it? I like the fact that we've just been like slagging off the world for like the last half an hour.
We've put the world to rights, haven't we?
We had a 10-minute conversation about hemorrhoids. And now we're...
As you do.
That could be the new comic. Here we go. I'll always get inspiration when we talk to each other about it in our next collaboration. So I'll be noting.
Ooh, I like the sound of that. Yeah. So if there's a reference to hems and farmers and stuff in your next story, then I know where you've got your inspiration.
That'd work
from
in the pre-mortis files, wouldn't it? Hemorrhoids that came alive.
Yeah. Ooh. I think I need to write that down.
Well, I was going to say, how are you? But we have had a chat. So I might slice quickly into, you've just done Liverpool Comic Con.
We have indeed.
Which was quite successful for you, what you're saying.
It was incredibly successful. I think I mentioned earlier that I'm not a big fan of huge kind of commercial conventions. Because they can be incredibly busy and believe it or not, I'm not really big on peopling. Far too many people for my liking. But I'm not antisocial. I can be very social.
Yeah.
But it's really busy, and obviously with these kinds of things, they call them comic cons. There's very few comics involved. This really are TV and film cons, and which is, if you go in there expecting them to be TV and film cons, that's exactly what you're going to get.
Which I think is what the majority of the world now expects.
To be fair, I was
one of the great, and I'm sure you and Damien as well, used to listen to my rants and probably join in on them about, this hasn't got enough comics, but I think... I've kind of almost moved past that now, and I sort of accept
it,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's and I think because of that, although we didn't get much chance to walk around and see all the other traders because it was so busy and so...
Oh, good.
It was in the M&S Arena in Liverpool, and it's such a complex maze of corridors and stuff to get to. We didn't venture too far because you'd never find your way back. But because of that, I think because we had comics on the table, people were like, oh, and they were drawn to them. So I think maybe we were... you know, one of few, if any, people who were selling comics. So people were quite taken with that. And we got chatting with people, explaining that, you know, we write and draw the comics and stuff. And they flew out. We sold quite a few. We have a 3 for 10 thing going on. Yeah. And people would go, oh, I like that. Well, if you get another one, it's only going to cost you £2. You're like, oh, okay then. So we did the hard sell on that bit. And it was really good. But we made a killing on original art and prints because we were very mercenary. And we were kind of shilling stuff because Kevin Smith and Jason were there, you know.
Muse, yeah, Jason Muse.
Yeah, Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say, well, it was a very sort of business thing, but that's what we did. We thingied on that.
There's no point going somewhere if you're not going to sell stuff that people want,
essentially.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we were incredibly lucky. The fact that we were on the floor above where they were doing the autographs and photo shoots and stuff like that. So people would come up the escalator and go, ooh, and see what we'd done, you know. And it was, you know, some people would come past and go, Who are these? It's like, oh, they're actually here today. Other people come past and go, oh my God, you know, we don't expect anybody else to know who these are, kind of thing. So yeah, and it was just really a really nice atmosphere. We were very well looked after. We were in a really good position where there was loads of footfall going past and stuff, and just a really thoroughly nice vibe about it. And everyone was just lovely. It was I knackered absolutely because it's a long day, you know. And lots of smiling and talking stuff. But everyone was absolutely lovely. So, yeah.
Say what you will about the old Mickey Mouses. They're a friendly bunch, aren't they?
They are a fantastic bunch. I mean, I used many years ago, I used to go out with a Scouser. And technically, Damien Real is technically a Scouser.
Oh, he's kind of one, isn't he? Almost.
Because he always says, well, they move the boundaries, as he always says. But, you know, yeah. I mean, lovely, lovely bunch of people. You can't. But there's people from all over the country. There's people have come up from Ireland, down from like Southampton, from Scotland, a few Scots there as well.
Oh, right.
But because of Kevin Smith, and there was a lot of the Lord of the Rings people there. So there was a really eclectic mix of people there. So, and they had a lot of panels as well, people talking. Oh, and the guy, Dave, Clay Charles.
Red Dwarf. Yeah,
sorry. Yeah. Memory. The Red Dwarf gang were there as well, so that was a draw. There were some really big people there. But yeah,
I quoted him yesterday in an email. Was it Graham? I didn't get an education. I went to art school. Graham Lister. Yeah, I literally quoted him yesterday in an email. So.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Like Campbell School of Art. If you see that lot, you know. But which is an interesting segue. I'm glad that went well. And maybe you are right, because being the one comic seller at a comic convention where there aren't any comics has got to be an advantage, isn't it? Yeah, let's
absolutely.
Face it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
But the weird thing was is that some people would come to the stall, and one lady asked, she goes, where do you, she looked around. She was dead. She was quiet. And she looked and she said, can I ask you something? I said, yeah, ask away, you know. She goes, where do you source your stuff from? I went, we do it. We write and draw it. And she went, oh. And because sometimes people don't realise that you are the artist stood behind the table.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow. Oh, I had no idea. Because they just assume that when you're there as a trader, you're getting your stock and stuff from other people and then selling it on. So it's well worth capturing people's attention to tell them, we draw this.
Yeah.
We draw and write it. And then they go, oh, right, I didn't realise that. You'd be amazed at how many people think that you're getting your stuff from a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah.
You know.
And I know you're not the sort of people to put a sign up with an arrow saying, meet the artist.
I know.
But, you
know,
there's got to be a happy medium somewhere there, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And people bought stuff. So, will you sign it? It's like, why do you want us to sign it? But it's very lovely. You feel very touched when people go, will you sign it for us? It's like, we ain't never going to be famous, but you're
not.
More than happy. You know who I am.
Get out of my eye. Get out of my eye line.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to a bit of education, because I don't think I've ever really asked you. I'm going to say, for a lot of comic, mostly dudes, you know, the love of art and the love of comics is kind of a straight line. I got a love of art because of comics, but I'm going to say it's probably different for you, is it? Yeah. So where did your sort of love of art come from, first age?
So I kind of, it's a weird thing, and I will be the first to admit, and I don't mind admitting this, that I've never really been a big comics fan.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I dislike comics. It's just, it wasn't in my radar. So when I was a kid, the only comics that I'd ever been exposed to was the Beano and Dandy.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know,
same
it's
as all
a kid
of us,
thing.
Mate, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, absolutely. So I'd get, well, I wouldn't get it. Me mum and the dad would get it. I'd get the Beano. My brother would get the Beano and I'd get the Dandy. And then we'd read it and then we'd swap and read each other's and then swap it back. And then come Christmas, we'd get the annual, the Beano and Dandy annual, stuff like that. So that was my only exposure to comics. But I've always been interested in art, and because my dad was a bit of an artist, and you know, he'd sit and he actually taught me to draw. He'd sit there and he'd go, right, I draw a line, you draw a line. And so that is exactly how he taught me to draw. And then from that then kind of inspired my love of art. And I just would go away and I would draw comic strips, you know, just off the back of the Beano and Dandy and stuff. I'd draw me little comic strips, make up my own characters and stuff. But I was always just a drawer. I'd always draw. I'd copy stuff from magazines, from like TV Times, Radio Times. I wouldn't draw from life. That came later on. But I'd draw. I'd copy all the time. My brother was the same. So that sparked the competition in me. I wanted to be better than my brother. So he was 5 years older than me. So he had those extra years on me. So he'd already been drawing and stuff. So there was that influence. My dad's influence, his influence. My competitive streak wanting to be better than my brother and wanting to take it further. And then I went to art college, which I don't know why I bothered, really. Most people will tell you that art college is a pile of shit. It's better just to go. Once I left art college.
As I understand, the foundation course is the best bit, is it? Is that right? But if you start sort of flying off into other areas, it gets a bit niche.
Yeah. I've done kind of GCSE art. Then I did A-level art.
All right.
And then from there, I went straight. Because there was a foundation course where people would come straight from school. Straight from school and go straight into the foundation, whereas I, because I'd bounced that and done GCSE and A-level, went straight into a BTEC diploma. But the thing that we found is that the tutors were very, this is the way that you have to draw, and if you didn't draw like them, they didn't like it. They didn't like you being different. They wanted to mould you into the way that they drew and that they, you know, because some of them had come from industry and then and come into teaching. But it was a very very cliquey kind of thing. And if your face didn't fit, then you were in for a difficult time, you know. But the only thing I learned from art college was life drawing. And I absolutely loved that. I'd never done life drawing before. And if you're going to learn to draw, life drawing is the thing to learn. It's to learn about the human form, you know, the skeleton, the structure, the muscles, foreshortening to get your angles right and stuff like that. And then that was the thing that really inspired me with art. And also it also exposed me to a broader genre of comics as well because of the people I was mixing with. So okay. Because I came from a little village on the North Wales coast, very sheltered life. So I knew my Beano and my Dandy and that was it. So I went to art college and this whole world opened
sort
up for me.
The pre-Vertigo world, I'm guessing. All the sort
We've
talked about it before on here, haven't we? Talked about Dave McKean, I think, opened up for you.
Dave McKean. I got introduced, obviously not to Dave McKean, but to his work in college. And it's like, oh my God, because I was under this false belief that comics were cartoon characters, you know, like, you know, Dennis the Menace, Minnie the Minx and that kind of stuff. And I got exposed to this and went, oh my God, you can have proper art. And I'm not dismissing the art in the
Beano. I totally understand.
That is proper art. But you know what I mean? It's, you know, that is a skill in and of itself. But to see this as like paintings in a comic blew my mind. And I thought, oh, wow. You know, but it, I still at that point didn't think that I could do that. I didn't think I was capable of creating a comic because I thought only established famous people did comics.
Well, that was my next question that I have written down, actually, because I don't know if I know what your first comic was.
Okay.
Right.
So the first comic was Pre-Mortis.
It was. Wow. Well, that's all due respect to you because you're a lady who's much younger than me. But that's something of
I'm not that much younger. Yeah,
it's something of a jump. Something of a jump in years, if you don't mind me saying. So sort of discovering the work of Dave McKean in, I'm going to say, the 90s to doing a comic in 2019. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So what brought that on? What brought that on?
So it was kind of. I mean, I've been tinkering with art and doing stuff for, you know, donkey's years ever since I was a kid. And then there was a period of time, like a lot of people, adulthood comes along, life gets in the way and all the rest of it. And I didn't do a lot of art and stuff. And then back in 2014, I think it was, I set up a local art group. And that was kind of, there was a reason I did that. And that was because we were trying to, I'm using the royal we here, but the library needed to keep footfall in the library. Otherwise it was going to get closed down. So there was like a disused room that they had that was just full of rubbish. And the lady that worked there and the head of the kind of library section said, we'd love to turn this into a gallery. So they managed to get some funding to do it and turn it into a gallery. And then the woman who ran the library went, oh, wouldn't it be good if we could have some art classes? In I swooped, you know, and the rest is history. So I went over and said to her, look, you know, I hear on the grapevine that you'd like to do some art classes. I can volunteer myself. I can put together something. I can run an art class. I don't want to get paid for it. I want it to be a voluntary thing try and get footfall in and all the rest of it. She went, that would be amazing. And she did say, she goes, we can't pay you. I went, I don't want paying. You know, I've got a body of like equipment and stuff like that. And I applied for a council grant and got a grant. It was about £250. And I went out and bought a load of equipment, paper, pens, pencil, all the usual stuff. So I set up and stuff. And then the first time I did it, I think we did a big library opening, a gallery opening and stuff. And everyone, ooh, art classes. And then that was it then. Everyone disappeared. So I think the first session I had one person turn up. So I ran it, you know.
Yeah.
Next time there was nobody and I thought, I need to get this out more. So I went to my next door neighbour whose ex-father-in-law and his mate went to different art groups in other places. So I said, they go to art groups. And she said, yeah. She goes, but trouble is, it's closing down. And I went, oh. So I said, right, tell him I'm doing this art class, blah, blah, blah. Rest is history. He came along, told a load of other people. They come along. They told a load of other people. You know, so we had this art group that grew and grew and grew. And we had a couple of exhibitions. And I've waffled here a bit, to cut a long story short, that then refueled my love of art and, you know, getting back into drawing and painting and stuff like that. And then in 2018 or 2019, we set up the business then.
Okay.
The Art 92 business. And that was purely off the back of my kind of sudden love of drawing again. Also got Damien back into it because he hadn't drawn for so long and he saw how much it was like affecting me in a positive way, getting back into drawing. He got back into drawing. So people were asking us, will you do commissions and things like that? And we were like, we could, but we need to do this legitimately, you know, so we can take commissions and pay our taxes and all the rest of it, because you never know who's going to ask you for a commission.
Yeah.
Works for HMRC, you know. So we set up the business and started, you know, doing stuff and went, hang on a minute, we've got this business now. There's nothing stopping us doing whatever we want. So Damon had wanted the idea of doing a comic, and I went, oh, I'm not sure I'm capable. And he went, well, why don't we do like a joint thing, you know, and do this sort of joint comic. And so I went, oh, all right then. And it was a baptism of fire for me. I felt it was really pushing me out of my comfort zone. I wasn't very comfortable doing it. And I've got to be honest with you, when I look back at it now, it makes me cringe a little bit. There's some bits and you think, oh, no. God. But, you know, that's the end of the day. If you don't put stuff out there and you don't do stuff, you're never going to improve, are you? You're never going to get better at what you do, you know.
Yeah.
And I look at it and think, oh, there's areas that are a bit dodgy. And if I was to do it again, I would do it differently. I would do it better, hopefully. But that was our first foray into doing that.
You've done loads. For those who don't know, by the way, Damien is your husband, and he's the other member of the art group that we talked about initially in your intro. But you've done loads since then. So you,
yeah.
I mean, I thought it was much before. I mean, because I'm old, I have no sense of time. But I thought it would have been like at least 20 years or something. But yeah, because well, let's move on to some of the other stuff you do. I really want to talk about, I think your best work so far is what you've just brought out. And we're going to talk about that in a bit. But I want to mention the two times we've collaborated. And also the thing you did the piece with Alan Henderson. So,
yes.
So you've done, which is, I'm thinking, because The Grey Man is called, isn't it, off the top of my head?
Yes. Yeah.
So we as a community, produced three anthologies called Drawn Under the Influence. First one edited by Sarah Harris, second two edited by Eamon Clark, and we did a story in issues 2 and 3, but you did a story with Alan in issue 1 about a grey called The Grey Man, which I have to say, I don't think I've ever told you this, but I read the script for that early. Alan showed it to me and I loved that. Really good.
It's a great story, isn't
great
it? It's
concept.
Really wonderful. Yeah.
So how did that come about? Alan just approached you, did he? When sort of
he
the
did,
names,
yeah. Which I thought was lovely, because I think Alan was looking for somebody to collaborate with, and I think it might have been, and somebody might be able to correct me on this, I'm not sure, but I think maybe Sarah might have suggested. So I'm not entirely sure, because it's such a long time ago now. Sorry, that was my stool making a strange noise. such a long time ago now.
Yeah.
And then Alan, obviously, he messaged me and stuff, and I was like, yeah, I'd be honoured to. You know, I've never been asked to collaborate with anybody before. So that was, apart from obviously the one I did with Damien, but that's a bit different.
Yeah.
And I went, yes, I'd be honoured to, you know, and he was an absolute dream to work with. I'd send him proofs and stuff like that and say, is this okay? Does this, because I always appreciate that somebody else is writing, you will have an idea in your head of how you'd like it to look. So how somebody else might interpret it might not be the way that you want it to be. So
yeah,
I was very conscious of that. I didn't want to go, well, this is the way I think it should be, so therefore it should be like this.
Yeah,
I wanted Alan to say, you know.
I think you're probably the same as that. And that's very much how I see comics, is it's two people putting something in and it comes out as a different thing. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always love getting art pages from everyone, and you especially, where I see it and I think, oh, okay. Well, it's better. You know, it's almost like it's better than I imagined, which is definitely.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. That's nice, that. But as an artist, you're always very conscious of how, because that's how people's brains work. You know, it's a bit like witnessing two people witnessing exactly the same incident.
Yeah.
One person will have a completely different take on what they saw compared to the next person. So it's the same with art.
Interestingly called the Rashomon effect. Do you know that?
That's
a legal term. Yeah, it comes from the Kurosawa movie, where all these people witness this attack in the woods and they all give it a different account.
And
none of them are lying, but they all give this account from their own point of view almost. Yeah.
I
suppose it isn't. There's an artistic Rashomon going on there, isn't there? Very much so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to kind of put my take on it and say to Alan, well, this is how it should be. I wanted Alan to have input. And
yeah.
And he did. He would look at things and went, that's great. Or can we just change the angle of that, or, you know, whatever it may be. So I'd send him, you know, rough proofs and stuff. And then I'd work them up for it and send them, does this look okay? And yeah, he loved it. And I really, and again, it pushed me out of my comfort zone a bit, because I was working on somebody else's script. If I was to go back again, I'd probably redo certain bits of it, because I look at it and go, oh, I'm not sure about that. But that's what artists do. We are constantly looking at our work and constantly criticising ourselves.
Oh, the good ones are always perfectionists, aren't they? You know, yeah, they really are.
But you're always like kind of, but Alan loved it, and it was, and he was an absolute joy to work with. And I'd happy to work with Alan again. Yeah,
good,
absolutely.
Good guy. I was texting him last night. And then we worked on it in issue 2. We did the towel. I surprised you with this one, because we talked about it. I sent you it. And I was quite specific in descriptions in that one. And then after you drew it, I told you that it was a true story.
Yeah.
Yeah. From my much younger days, I might happen to say. But that was, I don't know if I didn't want to tell you to start with, because I didn't want that sort of heavy burden of.
Yeah.
But I also part of me thought she's got to be wondering why I'm being so descriptive in this about colour of eyes and everything. You know, it's like, yeah. But you fucking knocked out of the park, mate. I love the way you drew it. I was looking at it again today, and there's a moment at the start where it's the male gaze. So it's a man watching a woman he's known before, and she doesn't know he's there, or you think she doesn't know he's there. And there's a moment, I think I wrote in the script, where I wanted to describe her personality as almost like an emotional manipulator, where she touches the arm of the waiter. And you capture it so well. Yeah.
Thank you.
We all know those social butterflies, don't we? We see them at parties, don't they? And we all know those people who play us by touching our arm when they talk to us.
It's a very manipulative thing to do, and it captures people's attention by doing that soft touch of the wrist or the shoulder. And
allow me to say so, because I'm a massive fan of the fairer sex. It's definitely a female trope, I think. Because as a man, you can't really go touching people, can you? But women, it's almost easier to, you know.
Very much so, yeah. But I think the other thing as well is just to sort of add into that, it's also very much a Welsh thing. I can say that because I am Welsh, but you'll find that if you talk to a Welsh person, they will touch you, but not in a weird way. It's what they'll do. They'll touch your arm, they'll touch your shoulder, they'll laugh and they'll grab hold of the top of your arm as they're laughing. But it's a very Welsh sort of trait when they're talking, and it's an affectionate thing. It's very much an affectionate thing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's something that women, we can get away with doing that to a degree.
I know what you mean. It's interesting, and I like the way that worked to the culmination of the final moment where you realize she has seen him, and you realize she's trying it again. And it came from a true story. And one day when we meet, I'll show you a picture of the person, because I think I can find one. I don't know if I've got one in a box of photographs or something somewhere, but I'll show you a picture of the person and you can say, oh, yeah. And you uncannily captured them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah.
I remember sending you, I think I sent you like a little worksheet of different looks of somebody. And I said, which one do you prefer? Because I'd used like a book that we've got with stills of people, of different emotions and stuff. And I thought, I'll use this. So I sent that. And then I think I numbered them. And you went, yeah, number three. Perfect. So I'll use that. So I used number three. So again, it was that thing that I had a vision in my head of how this person would look. But does it look how you anticipate they're going to look? So that's why I sent them and said, which one do you prefer?
It's weird that we've got this visual, not just a visual memory, but we've got an activation by visualization in our lives, because so much of our life has been absorbed in looking at art, I guess. It's weird, isn't it? Sometimes I was saying this to Fingerman when I met him last time. I was saying to him, I imagine if I read too many of your comics, I imagine people have that sort of slightly disfigured Fingerman look to them. And I almost imagine if I read a load of John Buscema or, you know, something, I would almost, it becomes part of your visual life somehow.
Yeah.
It becomes part of reality is what I'm trying to say.
Of course.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Cool. And then we moved on to something that, again, was another one where I'm thinking, I'm definitely pulling you out of your comfort zone, but you nailed again, was we did Evil Twin in DUI3, which is a comedy story. And you,
I really enjoyed doing that.
I added a couple of bits in there just for you. So the one I added... She meets the current reality twin, the newsreader, and she says something to him like, nice try, where he asks her out in the middle of the show. And I thought, I know you'll love that. Yeah.
Absolutely love that. The little nuances in it are absolutely perfect. And it just captures like the current state of society perfectly.
We needed to play a bit on... the evils and the delusions of social media, didn't we? A bit, I think we kind of played a bit on that. But yeah,
definitely.
That was brilliant. So if you can get digital copies, go and pick up DUI. It is on Global Comics and it's on Comic House and it's a few different places. You can find Helena's work there. But what I do want to move into, I want to move it a bit more into the Art92 world and talk a bit about stuff. We've already talked about Pre-Mortis, but I think it's important that we talk about Clear Run. So Clear, did you want to just give I don't like pitch, because Vince will murder me if I say pitch, but it just what you think it's about. It's very, there's no other books like this that I'm aware of that are like this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there might be something out there, but certainly if there is anything out there, it hasn't crossed my path. And I didn't take any didn't take any inspiration from anything I'd seen, you know. So if there's anything out there that's similar, it's like I've not copied it. It's completely, you know, my own work. But I mean, the first one, we, for those that don't know, we adopted a rescue greyhound in September of 2020, which was basically right in the middle of the pandemic.
Rescue dogs are the best, Helena.
Honestly, yeah, absolutely fantastic. And we'd always, for a very long time, we've really fancied having a dog, but we were both working, we were both commuting, we were out of the house far too long, and it would have been really unfair to have a dog that hardly saw us. We'd get home and you know, we'd leave him first thing in the morning, and it just wasn't fair. And then we found ourselves in this position where, actually, when you think about it, it was quite a leap to do this and quite a risk, because I was unemployed at the time. I'd been made redundant at the beginning of the pandemic, and I couldn't get work because it was just the wrong time to be looking for work. So we thought, this is the perfect time to get a dog, because Damien was working from home. I was unemployed. And you think, if anybody out there, you know, who's risk averse would go, what the hell are you doing getting a dog when you've got no job? You know, we've got this pandemic. But it was that thing that if we don't do this now, when are we ever going to do it? Because even when I did get work, I was determined to get work either working from home or working much, much closer to home. You know, I was never going to do that commute again. It nearly killed me. And I thought, why did I do this all these years? So anyway, cut a long story short, we had to make an appointment because of the pandemic, to go at a certain point, go masked up and everything. So we went, and they asked us what our life is like, what kind of lives do we lead, a busy household, you know.
They do stuff. Like a home inspection sometimes, don't they? Come and see what your house is like.
They normally do, but what they did is they did a video thing. So we walked around our house with a phone.
Because of the pandemic,
Which made sense, because obviously we'd met, he was actually called Nemo at the time when we met him.
I don't like that.
I know. So, when we went and we said what kind of people they are, they went, we think you'd like Nemo. So, okay, because I'd always, I tell a lie. I'd always liked the idea of a greyhound, but I did a couple of greyhound commissions at the beginning of the pandemic. And I got chatting with the client, and he was telling me how lovely greyhounds are. And I thought, ooh, you know, that's planted a seed for me, that is. Anyway, go back to the thing. So we met Nemo for the first time. And he came along very gingerly, looked into my eyes. That was it. I was gone.
Mate. He's got such a sad and tragic face.
God, he looked into my soul. And then when we heard his backstory, it was like, oh, my God. He'd been running in Ireland, and then he'd finished running in Ireland, and he was very lucky to leave Ireland
I understand it, they're very lucky to survive when they're not running. There's a lot of dogs found in ditches and stuff like that.
I won't even go into what they do to them in Ireland once they stop running. But and he got shipped over to Wakefield,
right?
And did a few more races in Wakefield, and then obviously he wasn't winning, so they put him in a van, brought him to Manchester and Cheshire Dogs Home. He wouldn't get out of the van. Apparently, he was so frightened, and he ended up messing himself. And you think, oh God. So when we heard this backstory, it's like I have to have him in my home.
Yeah.
I need to give him lots of love. Anyway, we went twice. To two visits to see if, you know, if we were compatible. And the third visit, he came home with us.
Oh, lovely.
And then it was just watching him grow from being this really anxious, really frightened big dog. You know, if anybody came near him, he'd jump up and he'd jump behind you and he'd bump and bang. And even now, he still doesn't like a loud noise and stuff. He gets very, you know, anxious about it.
Yeah.
But watching him develop into this, I wouldn't say he was confident, but he's much more confident. And I got this spark, and I thought, this would make a really nice story, you know. And then I actually wrote it like longhand, like a proper full-on story. And then I realized this would make a really good three-part story, so that the first part is his story,
which is issue one, isn't it?
The issue one is three parts of him, his kind of story, our story, and then the third bit is our story together as a family. I'm going to call it family because
it's fine. Do it.
Family.
I'll do that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I did it in black and white because I wanted to show how he brought colour into our lives, and you can see the pages going from black and white to colour and all that kind of stuff. And then I was going to kickstart it. I think it's 2021. I was going to kickstart it, and then obviously, like a lot of people know this, I didn't kickstart it because I got diagnosed with cancer and it all kind of went down the wayside.
Yeah.
And then the next year I thought, I don't need to kickstart this now. Let's just put it out. Let's get it done and put it out, you know. And it was received so well that it just, made me really warm, you know, warm the cockles of my heart.
Favourite books of the year lists and stuff like that, didn't it? You know, as much. I mean, I think me and Matt Buncey on the Slack, we often talk about it. Oh, I see there's another issue of that comic out that I think I've got something in my eye again. Yeah, so we discuss it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I mean, you know, we talk about it. I send you pictures of, because I've got a rescue dog who's about an eighth of the size of your dog. Who's a fucking bastard. My God. I wouldn't be without him. But like you say, I've never met anyone who said, oh, we should really get a dog and then regret it.
No.
You know, they're not out there. Those people are heartless if they are. But, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the thing is, you were living with your muse, basically, weren't you? He was so clearly Marty, as you've now called him, allow me to say.
Yes. I should have mentioned that.
I'm so stupid, right? Yes, hold it up, because that's why I realised he's called Martin. It's when you held that class up that's got Back to the Future on it literally 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's who he's named after. Yeah. Well, to be honest, we toyed with different names and stuff like that, because they said at the home, he doesn't even respond to Nemo. She said, so just call him whatever you want to call him. It's just a case of, you know, repetition and stuff.
Plus, if he goes missing, you got all the people laughing.
Oh, God.
Finding
absolutely.
Nemo. People are just going to ruin you. Yeah.
It's like, nah. So yeah, I thought, right, well, and then within a few days, that was it. He knew that was his name, you know. Although he gets all kind of nicknames now, you know. We call him various kind of Mr. Snoots, Mr. Boops, you know, all kinds of ridiculous. But he does respond to them because of the tone of your voice. That's all he's responding to. He's like, you know, baby. Oh, God,
he's such a lanky fucker as well, isn't he? Excuse my French.
He's massive. Because when we went to visit him, he's very narrow, but very tall and long. So we could, you know, he's like an ironing board. You could fit him into a small, narrow space, you know. But afterwards, I remember Damien going, he's bigger than I thought. It's like, he's all right. You know, we don't have a massive house, but I said, he's fine. And he is, he slotted in perfectly, bless him. He does like to get in your way sometimes. And it's like, no, you need to move. And you're kind of going by the side and he keeps moving. It's like, move.
Now, I've got it in front of me. And we'll be running a competition in a second to give a couple away. But I just want to talk about a couple of things I noticed in this I really do enjoy. And I really like the fact that you open it on a checklist. But it's a very cunning chapter list, but it's done as like a note. Yes. Things to do with Marty. Getting him to sleep through the night. The stairs. Just says the stairs. exercise on a long lead, because I know you're my running guru. Going running with him, lap dog and the sofa. Now, you don't make a great lap dog, I'm going to say.
And then, he tries, and then he realises he's far too big.
yeah. Which is just a cunning way of telling us what's in the comic, but doing it on a note. Yeah. It's lovely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then page one is brilliant. And it's almost counterintuitive to how you lay a page out, to me. But it works so well. So page one is this... This is issue two, so clear on two I'm looking at. Page one is like this whole, we've just got his corner, but his nose and his eyes, his eye, bottom right. And the rest of the page is just, you know, he's sitting there in the dark thinking, right, what's going on? What's going on? You know, it's like that, isn't he? Yeah.
Bless him.
Lovely.
I know.
You do love drawing him. That's the best. So you can tell. Yeah.
That was I think before we'd even picked him up, I drew him off a picture that was on the Manchester and Cheshire Dogs Home website.
Ah, right.
I drew him and I thought, he's going to be my muse. I'm going to be constantly drawing. And I've got like a whole suite of drawings of him. And again, that was another kind of thing that inspired me to think, actually, I could draw him in a series of... And I didn't want to draw him as a talking dog. So he's a thinking dog. He's thinking stuff, you know. And I'm humanising him and kind of thinking that he's thinking that way. But just the look in his eyes, you can see him thinking, what?
Yeah, it's great. And so we get a little section about him like seeing the stairs as a challenge and then going up the stairs and running down the stairs. And he's the sort of dog, if he walks down the stairs, I would watch him because I'd be worried he'd fall down. Yeah.
Seriously, Tony, we had nightmares. So we were warned when you take a dog home, particularly a greyhound, because they've very rarely been in a house unless they've been fostered. Sometimes they get fostered.
Yeah.
And then just to get them used to household things like the washing machine, TV, kettle, you know, all the noisy things in the house. So he was actually, weirdly, he'd never been in a house, but he was fine with the noises. The Hoover didn't bother him. TV didn't bother him. Kettle, washing machine, none of that bothered him. Because I think in issue one, I did a full page of him just looking at the kettle, looking at the washing machine, you know, looking at stuff like that. So we thought we need to get him used to going up and down the stairs, because otherwise we wanted him to have free reign of the house. Because when we were upstairs, particularly in the first few months, he got quite upset that we were not near him, that we were upstairs and he was downstairs, and he had this little whimper, this little indiscernible whistle. He had this little whistle. So we thought, we need to get him used to the stairs. Anyway, the first time we opened the door to go up the stairs, he ran up them. His bloody arse was bouncing against the wall. I thought, oh my God, he's going to break his legs. Dear God. And then he got to the top of the stairs, looked down and went, I'm not going down. And we had to carry him down like a rolled up carpet. Dear God. And we were both laughing. I think Damien was at the front. I was near the goods at the end, trying not to touch them. We were holding him like this, like a rolled up carpet. Damien's laughing. I'm laughing. Our shoulders are bouncing up and down. My God. And we thought, right, we've got to figure this out. So we took him. There's a set of stairs, steps that go over the motorway near us. So I took him at three, brought him down, up three, brought him down. I thought, right, let's get him used to that. Let's go back in the house. So we tried him on a lead. Ooh, up the stairs he went, bloody dragging us. Obviously, for comedy effect, I've made it.
Yeah,
you
know, I like that bit.
I'm on my belly, and I'm struggling with him. But it was like that. And then I'm not joking. We nearly gave up and thought, what are we going to do? And then one day he just went. He was like, you know, the Boston Dynamics. Those robots that he was like Boston Dynamics. He just kind of went doop, 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 up the stairs, and it was like, what the hell? And then he got to the top of the stairs and just went doop, 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 doop. It's like, you little bastard. So he did know how to do it. He was just having us on.
the other thing I always notice about your comics is your use of model work and the fact that they feature you and Damien. You know, this is different because it's autobio, you know, essentially, isn't it? You know, slice of life stuff. But do you say to him, right, can you lay on the stairs there so I can just see the top of your bum? And yeah, you do. You're nodding, yeah.
I literally do. I'm very, very kind of like Drew Struzan, you know, when he would take pictures of himself dressed as, you know, Indiana Jones, and he'd have all the hat and stuff like that. It's exactly what we do. For all of the comics that we've ever done, we've taken, like, I've said, like, can you just lie on the floor? Can you just do this? Can you? It's like the one I did for you, Tony, where the towel one. Hmm. There's that the image I drew of her lying in bed.
Looking sideways. Yeah, I love that.
So I basically laid down and said to Damien, can you take my picture? So I lay down with my hand, you know, in front of me and looking like he's holding my hand. And then obviously just when I drew it, I just superimposed a different person's face on it. So I do it all from photographs.
Like a model work.
I can't do stuff. I know people often think that artists can just magic things out of their head. I can't. I need some reference to work from to do that.
I'm going to call you out on that and say you probably can, because, yeah. But, okay, cool. And the other thing is, it's massively touching throughout. And then there is, I don't know if you want to talk, there's moments at the end where you're his saviours, but he kind of becomes your saviour as well, doesn't he? You know,
very much so. Yeah. I think obviously during the pandemic and stuff and the fact that I was unemployed and it all got a bit kind of shit, you know, what's the world's gone to shit. I can't get a job. And I'm a bit guilty of catastrophizing sometimes, thinking, what's going to happen kind of thing. But he kind of leveled me, you know. I'd apply for like three jobs in the morning and then take him for a walk in the afternoon. And that kind of leveled me, being out in nature and it was quiet and stuff, and was able to say hello to other dog, got to meet a dog walker that we're now friendly with. And it's just, he leveled me and, you know, we saved him, which was lovely. And then of course, when I was like, you know, going through surgeries and stuff like that, and apparently Damien would tell me that he'd pace the house looking for me. So I was, you know, I'd only been for a day and I'd come home in the evening. He'd pace and pace and pace looking for me. And then when Damien picked me up and I'd come in, and obviously I was in great pain, and I'd sit down and he'd just come along and just lay his head on my lap.
Oh, mate.
Just look at me. He'd think, oh my God. You know, he wouldn't try and get up on me, or he wouldn't run around and get all giddy. He'd just come along. Cause I think I wonder whether he
sensed the energy in the world as well, maybe. In the room.
It was just, you know, probably I smelt clinical, I smelt of, you know, surgery, I don't know, you know, but he'd come along and he just made me feel better. And then when I was able to, well, obviously I had to stop, you know, doing set exercises the day after surgery and stuff, but I'd go for a walk, I'd go for a slow walk because walking would hurt, but I'd go with him and he wouldn't pull. Weird. He wouldn't try and pull. And again, I may be, you know, kind of romanticising it all, but he seemed to me like he wasn't being overly pully, overly sniffy. He'd just pad along next to me slowly, and he'd look up at me and he'd think, "Oh my god,
oh my god, you've got the best, you got the best dog in the world." As we, as you know, I had an operation on Wednesday, and on Thursday my dog just jumped on my balls.
Well, that was the thing with him, is if he gets super excited, he will jump up on you.
Right.
And he'll put both his like paws
on your shoulders. He's that tall, isn't he? Yeah.
Because, and he's about as tall as me when he does that. And weirdly, he didn't do it, because if he'd have caught me wrong jumping up on my shoulders, it would have been, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, obviously my cancer was breast cancer, so I had surgery above the waist. Yeah. So if he did that, it would have absolutely floored me. But he didn't do it. It's as if.
Oh, okay.
And maybe I was giving off vibes of not doing it, but he just look up at me instead. It's like,
oh mate, they're great.
God, he's and the they're absolute great. Best.
Yeah, yeah. Go like if you get anything from this other than buying Helena's comics, go and get a rescue dog.
Get a rescue dog.
It's like the best thing.
Saves you. Yeah, absolutely saves you.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it does. He does. This is our third one in a row, little Sharknado we've got. He's a fucking bastard. But he just bites me. He's half Chihuahua, half Jack Russell, so he just spends his life biting me. But he's become... Well, you've drawn him. You've drawn him for us.
Yes, I have drawn him. Yeah, we love those.
That's up in the living room, that is, which is another little thing we talk about. But the other thing I do like... So we've kind of... We've probably made you a bit sad about rescue dogs and stuff now, but you do end the issue on a massive fart, don't you?
Oh, Tony, there is nothing. You see, nobody told us how windy greyhounds can be.
Right.
And how deadly their gas is as well. Dear God. And only after we got him, somebody who's got three greyhounds said, "Ooh, have you experienced the wind yet?" It's like, not yet. Anyway, so he has the fiercest wind. Most of it is silent wind.
Right.
You know, you just hear this like... You look around and think, what the hell? And he does it when he's overly excited. He does it when he's a bit nervous. And he was... Because we've been out all day for 2 days. When we were leaving, he'd be like... And at one point, he did like a... Was it Saturday morning? He did like a Morse code fart.
Oh, right. Save like, our souls.
Dear God. Sometimes he has proper kind of human farts, and he'll do a big downward dog, and he'll stretch and lift his arse up, and he'll go... And the first time he did that, I looked at Damien and went, was that you? And he went, that wasn't me.
Now I suspect it's Damien. I suspect it's him. But see, yeah,
that's the joy of having a dog, because you can always blame the dog. Just if you just lift a cheek, let one out, a cheeky one out, you know. So basically, he's got his own sofa. You know, he's taken over the other sofa, which we don't mind at all. But in the evening, he'll look at us and he'll give us that look, and it's like he wants to get between us. It's quite why he wants to fold this massive body between us, but that's his happy place. And as soon as he gets there, he gets all relaxed and starts farting. It can burn your hairs and your nostrils, and sometimes it's so bad you have to put your jumper over your nose, because it's just awful. But you know what? I even love that about him.
I know. So you hinted earlier that there's a third one coming. Is that right?
Well, I've started noodling with ideas for the third
one.
But I've just had... I need to do a price for somebody who's asked for a commission. So I've still got some bits and pieces to do. But I've also, just to sort of self-advertise here as well, but I've also been asked to do a talk about Clear Run.
Oh, nice.
Which is really nice. So I'm really excited about that.
Can you say where yet? Or
yeah. So this all came about because I did a talk for a group of kids, year 10 kids, which I think, are they about 10 or 11 years old? I'm old fashioned as far as school years are concerned.
Yeah.
No idea. But a friend of mine is a teacher, and she used Clear Run in her book group with her kids. So she said, would you mind doing a talk? I said, I'd absolutely love to do a talk. So they try and get, and I felt very honoured, because she goes, we get authors. And I went, God, you're calling me an author. So I felt but you just get this kind of this feeling. It's like, oh God, don't make me sound like better than what I am. But anyway, I did this Zoom talk with these kids, and they loved it because I had Marty next to me. So I was able to show them. And I showed them, I set up like a thing on a PowerPoint, and I showed them how I create it, you know, with sketches and stuff and storyboarding. And they loved that because they didn't know how you create a comic. So, and I explained stuff, and I used kind of big words and explained what the big words meant and stuff. I didn't want to dumb it down. I didn't want to be condescending to them. You know, the kid's not idiots. So, but they loved it. They and they asked me. They had a question and answer bit at the end. So they asked me. They'd already pre-prepared their questions.
Okay.
And they get. So then afterwards they went freestyle and started asking me random questions. What's your favourite food? You know, what's and all this. And then afterwards, my friend who's a teacher said, I'm so sorry about the random questions. I said, listen, if they feel comfortable enough to ask random questions, it means they felt comfortable, which is what I wanted. You know, I want them to feel comfortable talking.
So you take Marty to it with you?
Well, it was a Zoom thing, this one. But for the talk I'm doing later in the year, because it's a dog-friendly place, I'm going to take him with me so I can do the talk and have him with me, you know. Yeah, so I'm super excited. Yeah, so it's going to be at Norton Priory, which is in Runcorn.
Okay.
Which is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful place. It's an old monastery, an old priory, and it's still got some of the listed bits of it, and they've built over and on top of those bits. And they do this thing called Discover Sundays and pause at the priory because it's completely dog-friendly.
Oh, right.
So we went a few weeks ago now. It was a glorious day, and it's such a lovely place. And they've got everything set up for dogs and stuff. And he loved it. Lots of new sniffs and stuff. And he met loads of new people and that. So I'm super excited because they want me to also run some workshops as well, teaching people how to draw cats and dogs and things. And so, yeah, we haven't ironed out exactly what's going to happen as of yet, but we've penciled in a date.
That's great
news.
And
I'm in touch with the lady who's doing all the marketing stuff. So I'm super looking forward to it. Yeah, it'll be really, really nice.
Plus, for me, I like that you're doing that stuff, even though I don't get to go to it, because I know what you're like. It'll invigorate you to do issue 3. Definitely.
That's the thing. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Because I'm already thinking of some of the things that he's been doing. And I don't know how I'll play it. I don't know whether I'll do the same thing, but it's a suite of different stories. Or because, like I say, I don't want to humanise him. I don't want him starting to be a talking dog. I'm wanting to be a thinking dog, but I like to keep along the same lines. But I don't want it to get boring either, you know, because I was a bit cautious about putting one of those stories in that book because I didn't want it looking like I was getting my violin out. But it was important to show how he helped me and I helped him and stuff. And I kept it really short and succinct. So, but yeah, I need to think about what I want to put in there. So
good stuff, mate. That's brilliant. I am conscious of the fact that I said I'd only keep you half an hour.
I could waffle. I'm sorry,
Tony. No, it's not your fault. It's me. This has been glorious. This has been like almost, I feel like I've grown up and we've done a kind of a proper interview where normally we just talk rubbish to each other.
We do, yeah. Don't we? Yeah.
And we talk about, because you were my running guru as well. So I took up running and did. I ran every day for a year and you were like, oh, come on.
You it's know. Fantastic. I tell you what, I take my hat off to you because I lose my mojo quite quickly, but then I've gained my mojo back again. And that last week I did 4 runs in 4 days felt, because I knew that this weekend I was going to be eating crap at the comic.
Yeah,
I was going to,
crisps,
you know, Comic-Con diet.
Yeah.
And we've discovered this fantastic donut place. Oh my God.
Oh, I saw the bits of the donuts on your Instagram. Yeah.
Jesus, they were just so nice. I thought, right, okay, 2 days of indulgence. I'll get back on it today. Yeah. So I haven't been for a run today. I was too knackered this morning, but I will try and get some gym work done later.
Yeah, I did it on because I had this operation this week. I tried to do every day up until Wednesday because I know I'll have 2 weeks of nothing. But I'm desperate. Even now, it's only been less than a week. I'm desperate to get back on it.
Once it's in your blood, you do feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel lethargic when I don't run. And even though when I get back into running again, the first one's always like, oh my God, that was horrendous. But it gets easier as you keep getting.
I know we talked about it as well because we were talking about, because I don't listen to music. And it's such, it's brilliant for thinking time as well. And I think about comics and what I want to do and stuff like that. Yeah, all the time. Yeah. It's really good.
I come up with my best ideas. Yeah. Sometimes I can overthink and sort of ruminate about stuff when I'm running. Think like, stop ruminating, just enjoy the run and think about positive things. So sometimes I'll think of an idea and I think, oh, I'm going to get home and write that down, you know, for an idea for a story or whatever. Yeah. And then listening to, because I run really early, so I listen to the bird song and it's just glorious.
Yeah, me too. I do the early as well. Mm. We've talked about it, haven't we? Yeah. Brilliant. Anyway, well, let's just do the quick competition because I have a number of issues of Clear Run 2, which, although Dan Butcher did say should be called Clear 2 Run.
Yes, I said that.
Easy ideas, man. So we've got a couple of issues. So if you write into the Never Mind Anything website with a good name, I'm just going to say a good name for a dog. That's all I want. I'll send you free a copy of this comic. So if you go to nevermindanything.com and you'll find there's a tab to email in. I don't understand it. Whatever it is. I set it up about 4 years ago. I still don't understand how it works.
<Technology.
laughs> I don't know what I'm doing with it. So there you go. And where can people find you, H?
So we're on Facebook at Art92.
So it's numbers, all letters.
Yeah. All letters, and no gaps or anything. And the same for Instagram. So those are the two main things that we're on. I've kind of stepped back from X, gets on my nerves.
Me too.
So I find Instagram is super positive. It's a great positive place because it's all about pictures and things like that.
Yeah.
And Facebook, I'm on Facebook, but because I have to be to have the business side of it. So we keep that really positive, let people know what we're doing, where we've been, commissions and things like that. And also, as a side, I've also got another Facebook page, which is Pets by Helena.
Ah, yes.
So, and I just basically just put nothing but, I've been a bit quiet of late because I've just been so busy. But I try, if I can, to post a commission every day from my back catalogue, just to give people a feel for what I do. And if anybody wants to contact me about, you know, if they want me to do a commission and stuff like that. So.
Oh, they are so good. We've got two Sharknadoes, but the one of the Sharknadoes sits in my wife's art room and the other one sits downstairs. Yeah, love them,
oh,
mate.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, so good.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Good stuff. Well, if you can also, if you want to come on the podcast, we're going to start back with the History of Comics anytime soon. We've got two more episodes of Collaborators coming up. Two proper dodgy blokes on the next one. This has been normal compared to the dodginess that will appear next time with a certain Mr. Cumber and a certain Mr. Ashcroft. But yeah, thanks, H, mate. Absolute pleasure.
No, thank you, Tony. Thanks for asking me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.